Today's Minnesota Reads is made possible by the bookstore at Fitgers, a full-service book and toy store located on the bottom floor of Fitgers on Superior Street, online at fitgersbookstore.com. This morning on Minnesota Reads, our guest is Elizabeth Dorsey Hatley, and she's the author of a book called The Ku Klux Klan in Minnesota. Elizabeth, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
Nice to have you here. You were up in Duluth just a few days ago doing a reading from your book, is that right?
Yes, and a PowerPoint presentation, because in the book you couldn't put like full letters, so I had the audience get an opportunity to see the full letters.
Elizabeth, everybody that I've talked to when I mentioned what the book was going to be this week, what we were talking about, everyone I've talked to has given me sort of a goggle-eyed look, like the Klan in Minnesota. One of the things that was really fascinating to me in your introduction is what you identified as the weaknesses, in quotes, that the Klan exploited in Minnesota in the early part of the century, the teens and the 20s. Could you talk about that just a little?
Yes. What's the 1920s version of the Ku Klux Klan did was it allowed their members to vent their hatred against Roman Catholics, Jews, Germans, immigrants, African Americans, and labor unions.
Now, that's kind of surprising to me because so many people, even in the 20s, were either first or second generation immigrants.
Right. And with the second generation immigrants that were joining the Minnesota Klan, there was a special ceremony that they had devised, and it was called the naturalization ceremony that the Klan devised. So you go through this rite and be naturalized, and then you could thus become a member of the Klan, even though you weren't Protestant. Well, you had to definitely be Protestant, and you definitely had to be white. But the main thing with that particular naturalization rite, it would allow people who weren't native-born to join, so second-generation immigrants.
Elizabeth, we were the country in Minnesota in particular, perhaps, was going through such a huge change at that time. It was making the early strides toward a transition between an agricultural-based economy and industrialists and urban issues. That was another, air quotes, weakness that the Klan was able to exploit.
Right. And by joining the Klan, you felt like you were still in control of your communities, and you were still preserving your way of life. So with all those massive changes that were taking place, the Klan was selling to its members that we'll keep the status quo and things will continue as they are, regardless of the changes that are upsetting you or that are occurring in your area.
You were up earlier this week as a part of our Week of Remembrance this week to talk about the lynchings of three young black men in Duluth in 1920. Talk about the role of the Klan in those lynchings.
What happened there was, at the time, June 15th, 1920, there doesn't seem to been any direct involvement, but it was certainly a fertile ground afterwards, because within 5 months of the lynching, the Duluth Klan chapter got started. And you would think that Duluth would have had the exact opposite reaction, you know. And plus, the Duluth Klan had their meetings within three blocks of the lynching site, too.
You mentioned that in another community, it slips my mind at the moment, there was a very similar incident to what happened in Duluth, and yet the police stepped in and protected the men crowd was trying to take out and lynch.
Right. That was about 7 months previous to the Duluth lynching, and it was in East Grand Forks, Minnesota. And what didn't happen in Duluth happened in East Grand Forks. The law enforcement, the police, made it a priority to protect their prisoners, to get them to safety and to make sure that they've got fair legal trials. And that was accomplished by one man who basically had to keep moving his prisoners from mobs that had gathered in East Grand Forks. That when the men were originally put in the jail, they were moved to Crookston, and then they were moved down to St. Paul, all within 24 hours. So what didn't happen in Duluth happened in East Grand Forks. Law enforcement helped and stopped the lynching from taking place.
Now, you made a special point that the police officers in Duluth were World War I veterans. So yes, these were tough men. These were people that knew how to fight, knew how to handle themselves, and yet they didn't. And you allude to kind of a cover-up of the whole incident. Talk about that a little bit.
I wonder, with the Duluth Klan chapter, considering how many prominent members there were, if they didn't help keep people from being prosecuted, make sure people weren't brought into it, and plus they wanted it to be forgotten as quickly as possible. They were all in positions of power to make that happen. And with the police officers that were manning the jail that night, World War I veterans were extremely attracted to the Ku Klux Klan because of their law and order stances. So, yes, it does seem unusual that they had all those police officers and they couldn't do, quote-unquote, do anything that evening. But like I said, an example, East Grand Forks, one man did what 28 police officers couldn't do in Duluth, or said they couldn't do.
Elizabeth, what was the ultimate goal of the Klan? It would seem that they would have had more than enough to occupy their time in the South. Why come to Minnesota, where African Americans didn't even make up 1% of the population? What was their agenda to come this far north?
Well, essentially, they were a hate group. And as a hate group, you play on people's fears and insecurities, and you bring them all together, and you have a, and they did do it politically. They formed themselves and took over city council positions and school board positions. And they were also making money off of it, too, off of their members. And $10 a year, that was quite a bit of money, you know, for an individual to belong. And they also made money, profit on the robes and the hoods and banners and all the stuff, news publications that they had. You would get subscriptions to the Klan newspaper. So it was a money-making operation. It was a very well-organized hate group.
When you were talking about some of the motivators and some of the fears that the Klan was preying on, we're going to keep things the way they are, we're going to allow you to protect your community and maintain the status quo, I was struck by how often I've heard a lot of those sentiments being echoed now in this day and time. Should we need to be aware? Should we need to be afraid?
I think it's one of those things where history easily repeats itself if we're not careful and if we don't pay attention to our past history. And yes, it's very easy to make some comparisons today to what was going on in the 1920s. Fear of immigrants, wanting English to be spoken only in schools, religious prejudice. Yes, it's very easy to make a comparison today to what was occurring back then.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Your book is called The Ku Klux Klan in Minnesota. Elizabeth Dorsey Hatley was our guest. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and also by the bookstore at Fitgers, a full-service book and toy store located on the bottom floor of Fitgers on Superior Street, online at fitgersbookstore.com.